Well, already, gang, welcome back to the Gutowski Files, starring Stephen Gutowski. He is the founder of TheReload.com and the host of the weekly Reload podcast. This week, we have important stuff to talk about. Not that we don't every week, but this week, I want to kind of get right to it because I have limited time, and I want to make sure Stephen has enough time to talk about this, and I think this is critical. We're actually talking about, can I use the word reportage, Stephen?
Is that a word?
Is that a word?
Yeah. Reportage. Yeah.
So we're talking about recently the Washington Post, which was my newspaper of record as a young man growing up in the D.C. area and was for a long time a well-respected newspaper of record, kind of like the New York Times and L.A. Times, Chicago. Sure. Anyway, you get the idea. And recently they did a story, where they published a lot of very graphic photos. And this was something that traditionally they didn't do. And so Stephen over at The Reload wrote an article entitled, it's an analysis piece, The Washington Post's Problematic Approach to Publishing Gory Mass Murder Photos. And the idea being that this is something traditionally they didn't do, and they decided to do it very specifically, and they decided to pick very specific cases, the pictures of which to show. So Stephen, talk to us about what's going on and your take on that.
Yeah. And I wanted, I felt like we should talk about this because, obviously I wanted to get your view and some of the differences that you and I see between what the Washington Post has done here and, for instance, what Active Self-Protection does.
Sure.
Because obviously Active Self-Protection videos involve graphic violence in many of them. But the reasoning behind why you guys publish them is quite different, I think, from what the Washington Post has done with these mass shooting images. There's a number of problems, really, I think, with what the Post did and how they justified it. So for those who don't know and haven't seen, they published photos of the aftermath of 11 shootings, mass shootings, incidents like Sandy Hook and Uvalde and Las Vegas. And some of them feature body bags, some feature actual dead bodies. The Las Vegas picture features a number of dead bodies in a field. And they're quite graphic. And the justification that the Post used for this boiled down to essentially the idea that the American people should see these pictures because they don't understand the force of an AR-15 and what it can do. And you'll notice there I said AR-15, and that is because the pictures they published at the Post only come from incidents that involve AR-15s. And this was another sort of issue. Beyond the decision to sort of lower their standards to publish these graphic images in the first place, because they talk about, and there were a couple pieces that they published sort of explaining their reasoning. But they talked about why traditionally most major media outlets like Post don't publish graphic violent images of this nature. And that is out of the fear that it may dehumanize the victims and re-traumatize these victims' families or survivors, which I think are pretty legitimate concerns, and which seem to have come true if you've seen some of the reaction from victims' families. Some of them have been pretty upset at the publication of these images. Some of them are for it. I do want to make sure that's clear. Like some victims' families want these pictures to be out there for the same reason that the Post kind of articulates, which is that that they want people to see the brutality firsthand. So there's a split among victims' families, as you might expect with anything. Like, people are going to have different opinions on what should be done.
So the pictures are all exclusively from mass shootings that involved AR-15s. So AR-15 was used in the shooting, right?
That's correct. Okay. And I think that's one of the bigger problems with it. I think there's a basic level issue with publishing this kind of graphic content in the first place as a newspaper, because the logic they used essentially could be justified to publish any graphic image, because they're saying, well, we want to make sure people understand what this actually looks like. And traditionally, large papers or large media outlets, they have occasionally published graphic images, but usually that's reserved for incidents like war crimes.
Right.
For instance, Bucha, Ukraine, the Russian war crimes that were carried out there. You had the New York Times and several other publications publish graphic images along the same lines as what the Post published here. Or obviously the October 7th attacks by Hamas in Israel. You have seen major publications circulate the graphic images from those attacks. But generally speaking, at least my understanding has always been that is done because you're trying to, you know, document a war crime. You're trying to establish that this really happened because the people who perpetrated it, for one, like the Russian government, will often try to deny that this happened or cover up evidence of it. So
right.
That's one of the main driving impulses for why you publish those pictures. And then second, it's to, I guess, reveal the lengths that an organized group is willing to go to accomplish their either political or religious objectives, mm-hmm. right? So that's usually in the case where the organized group that carried out the attack represents an ongoing threat. So obviously the Russian army in Ukraine presents an ongoing threat to carry out more war crimes like what happened in Bucha, or Hamas continues to present a threat to the civilians in Israel in the same way they did on October 7th. So when you talk about mass shootings and publishing pictures from those, you know, it's not the same level of justification, I don't think. So that's one major issue. And then, yes, you get to the selective nature of this, because the Post only published photos from mass shootings that featured AR-15s. And one, they twisted themselves into all kinds of logical pretzels to get to the point where they only picked images from shootings that involved the AR-15s. And, you know, Cam Edwards from Bearing Arms and I did a whole podcast episode on this, and we could dive into a little bit more of that. But you know, I think as somebody who has seen a lot of graphic images of gun violence or just violence generally, you know as well as I do that images from other shootings or other mass killings are probably just as brutal as these images, but the Post chose to leave them out.
Yeah, 100%. I would say having been the first to respond to an active shooter kind of before, this was post-Columbine, but before it was sort of a byword where everyone was familiar with the idea. Mine wasn't a school shooting, but it was at a gym for young people in a troubled area that were there to learn boxing gym, basically. And, you know, the person who went to shoot that up didn't plan it out. It was an employee who'd been let go, and there's only theories on why he was let go. And he went home and armed himself and came back and started blindly shooting into this gym full of kids and trainers. When I went in there, we're reasonably sure that the shooter dropped a gun and ran, and he ran right by me as I'm running, and that's how close I was. And I can tell you, he was using a 9mm handgun, and it was carnage. There was people shot all over the place. Things that I won't repeat here because they're too awful and too graphic. But it does an AR-15. The only practical difference I can see with someone using that versus anything else is range, I guess. They want to do it from further away, because once if you're going from classroom to classroom, like in any of these terrible shootings like Uvalde or Sandy Hook, you're not shooting someone at 500 yards. You know, the gun that you're using is not irrelevant, but I just don't understand how I can understand if they're trying to make their point that mass shootings are bad and or guns should be curtailed because they're too easy to get or whatever. But singling out AR-15s it's almost an obsession with some people. I feel like it's very odd. It's very specific.
Yeah. And I feel like it's a bit misleading as you're getting at here, right? Because, you know, obviously there are differences that make the AR-15 more effective in certainly in like defensive situations. If you're going up against, for instance, when that escaped murderer was near my family's farm and he had a mm-hmm. rifle, I wanted an AR-15 because it gave me more range than my handguns do. But the reality is, in a mass shooting environment where you are in almost all cases shooting at people who are defenseless and at short distances, there isn't a whole lot of difference, I think, in the effectiveness or the difference between these different kinds of weapons. And certainly I don't think there's going to be a huge aesthetic difference in how these things look in the aftermath in photos and videos.
Regardless. And my point was going to be, look, if you want to single out AR-15 shootings, let's look at Glock 19 shootings, because that's a super duper common pistol. The AR-15 is the most popular rifle in the country. So I feel like, yeah, it's going to be used more often than some, you know, than a Mannlicher Carcano or something. Like, it's just going to get used more often. It's like saying most drunk driving fatal accidents happen in Honda Civics. Like, okay, that's not relevant to why they happen or how deadly they are. It's just it happens to be that's a very popular car. Does that make any sense, or is that a bad analogy?
No, I think that's part of why you see AR-15s show up in some of these higher profile incidents. I think when you're looking at these incidents, it's just not a huge difference what kind of weapon gets used, especially firearm. But even in, you know, and the problem too with just publishing photos of the aftermath of shootings that involved an AR-15, besides the sort of logical tangling they had to do to get to why they did it this way, is that you're misleading people, because it's just, take for instance the Santa Fe high school shooting. That the shooter in that case used a pump action 12 gauge shotgun, obviously extremely common firearm in the United States, one that is almost never brought up for conversations in what should be banned, right? And he used that to kill 10 people. And I guarantee that the pictures from that are just as gruesome.
Oh, I'm sure they're horrendous.
They're probably horrific. And, you know, there's also sort of something to be said about, like, some of this, there's, you know, I don't want to get to the position where I'm like saying no graphic photos should ever be published or people should not be able to see them, because I don't think that's true. And obviously not, because, you know, here I am on the Active Self-Protection podcast and I want to get into why, what the differences are. Sure. But there is something to be said, you know, about the idea that people don't understand how bad these attacks are. I don't think that's actually really true. Maybe they haven't seen the graphic pictures of them, but I think people have a very good understanding of how awful something like Uvalde or Sandy Hook were. And that the problem is that's just not, the lack of knowledge about that is not what's driving opposition to the policies that the Washington Post prefers. Because the thing is, the Washington Post published these as a news story, and then alongside of them, they published an editorial that called for banning AR-15s and similar firearms. And so, you know, I think that at the end of the day, the driving force behind publishing these images was a political message about why we should ban these firearms. And that's problematic because it misleads people on what mass shootings look like outside of ones committed with AR-15s. Kind of makes it seem like the AR-15 is a particularly you know, bad gun, and that if you got rid of that one gun, this issue would go away. And that's not true. And two, that people who oppose this policy are doing so because they're kind of ignorant to the reality of how bad murdering a bunch of children is, or murdering a, you know, 50 people, 60 people in Las Vegas or something of that nature. And again, I just don't think that's actually true.
Yeah. And I was going to say, you mentioned earlier, you asked, you know, or you posed the idea of active self-protection, you know, airing a video that may include something, some graphic violence. Those videos, all of them, look, we know that we have some people that just tune in, they watch the video, they watch the violence, and they tune out, they turn it off and go do something else. Sure. We can't do anything about that. There's people that just want to see violence. You know, when I was a kid, there was a Faces of Death video was a big deal that went around.
Yeah.
They wanted to see people die in awful ways. So that's always going to be a thing that people want to see, I guess. But every single one of our videos then comes with, after we show it, either John and Steph, John and Neil, John and me, doing a detailed analysis, a breakdown of what happened, what could have gone better, what could have been done differently, possibly. And it's not to second guess anyone. It's so that somebody gets a mental rep and they go, okay, now I've seen this happen now. You mentioned a story. I hadn't seen the video yet, but somebody in LA you know, walking home and somebody jumps the fence, you know, with guns. And it's like, that's not something I ever thought about happening. So I hadn't prepared for it. John and I had a video where I think it was a sheriff's deputy somewhere tased a guy in the middle of a freeway at night. And the guy fell down, the taser worked. And all of a sudden now there's a car coming. Guy got run over and killed. And so, you know, the reason we show that is not because it's cool to see someone get run over by a car. It's right. So that every cop, and trust me, police watch our videos, now has a mental work. They can go, okay, well, this could happen. I could be, you know, in a foot pursuit and I could tase the guy and realize, oh crap, I'm in the middle of a freeway. So maybe I need to wait until we get across the freeway or whatever. Versus, and we don't have a political agenda, and we have personal political opinions and stances. Every one of us does, but we do our best to keep it out of what we do as a company and what we present to the public. So yeah, I don't see anything analogous between our use of a video and then a detailed analysis versus just sort of pushing a political point or a point of view to change public opinion. That's not what we do at all.
Yeah, and that's where I wanted to get into that conversation, because I do think there's some nuance here, right? Like how should a media outlet, how should a company like ASP or The Reload or The Washington Post or whoever handle graphic violence, depictions of graphic violence? And because I do think there are obviously situations where it is appropriate to show it to people. And I'm not even necessarily for hiding it from people who want to find it and understand what reality is really like. Mm-hmm. Even war reporting can be fairly sanitized, especially in major media. You don't really see you see rubble and you see blood sometimes, but you're not, you don't always get to see that full nature of it. But I think if you're a responsible journalist or if you're just an ethical person generally, you want to publish images like that in the proper context with a good reason for why you're doing it. And when I look at what the Washington Post did here, I see more of a political motivation than anything else for why they publish these pictures. If I'm being as charitable as possible, because yeah, I mean, faces of death did come to mind to me as well. And I was like, you're just publishing things for shock value. That's what Faces of Death was.
Yeah.
For people of a certain age, you understand what it was, just people dying, just videos of people dying. And there was nothing else to it. It was just, here's the shocking images. And right. It was kind of presented as an entertainment thing, right? I mean, just pure, here's entertaining videos of people dying. It's kind of a gross, disturbing thing about. But regardless, like when I look at active self-protection, that's not what I see, right? I see an attempt made to educate people as to what how things actually happen in real life and what you can do about them, how you can learn from them. It's not done as a watch this person get beat up or stabbed or shot or whatever. I mean, honestly, one of the worst videos I've ever seen as far as graphic nature wise. And I'm not sure exactly why this sticks with me, but there's an active self-protection video where somebody gets murdered with a pool cue, by being stabbed in the eye. And for whatever reason, that just, the image of that was very disturbing, but the point of showing it wasn't, hey, look at this gruesome act.
Right,
it was,
right.
Hey, look at this fight that happened and what went wrong for this person and how you can learn from that yourself as somebody who is a self-defender, right? And that's the big difference I see.
I'll give you an example. When I was a police explorer back in Montgomery County, Maryland, one of the first things I went to was a DUI fatal accident. And it was as bad as you can imagine it being. A very large car hit a smaller car head on. The large car hit the smaller car in the A pillar, which is a pillar just if you're in the driver's seat, just to your left in front of you, where the windshield meets the door. And that pillar in the front bumper came in and hit this person basically in the face at a high rate of speed. And the person was essentially decapitated from the jawline up, was gone. It was all over the back of the car. It was all over the tailgate, the back window. But for some reason, Mothers Against Drunk Driving would never post an image of this poor young lady's decapitated body and brain matter all over the back window to make a point about drunk driving. Now, maybe that's something that you know, someone who's been caught drunk driving needs to see, you know what I mean? Like in a class Maybe. Or something in that kind of setting.
It's certainly debatable. Right. But again, yeah, if you're going to do it one, I mean, that's kind of more of an activist thing, right? Like you see this with pro-life protesters. Some of them, there's disagreement over whether you should show pictures of abortions at protests or what have you, and the effectiveness of that. But, and again, with the victims' families who do want stricter gun laws, that was sort of the catalyst for post-publishing these things. Like some activists do believe that these pictures should be shown to people and that will change their minds. And maybe they're right. I don't know. I just don't, that's an activist thing to do.
It's not strictly journalism, I think.
That's where it crosses the line from journalism to activism in my mind, in this instance, mainly because of the selective nature of it. Because the thing is, as you're describing there, mass killings of any kind are going to be awful to look at, the consequences of them, the outcome of it. Like you look at that Santa Fe shooting, it's going to be terrible to see pictures from that. You look at the University of Idaho stabbings, I mean, you've seen some of the stabbing videos on the Act of Self-Protection. They are terrible, terrible, terrible to watch. The Nice, the terror attack in Nice with the tractor trailer killed dozens of people by running them over. That is not a pleasant scene afterwards. It's just not. And maybe, you know, again, if you have come to the conclusion that people should see this because they're not aware of how bad this is, it doesn't make any sense then to limit that to one particular weapon used for mass kill.
Yeah. If there was a spate of people running people over, which isn't unheard of,
Waukesha parade.
We're only showing Dodge Ram pickups because they're big and they do more damage. Let me just read this quote really quick from your article over at thereload.com. Sally Busby, the paper's editor, justified publishing the pictures with the claim that most Americans don't understand the violence of attacks carried out by somebody with an AR. And here's the quote. Quote, like other news organizations, we cover the effects of these tragedies when they occur, Busby wrote. But because journalists generally do not have access to crime scenes and news organizations rarely, if ever, publish graphic content, most Americans have no way to understand the full scope of an AR-15's destructive power, and I'll finish the quote, or the extent of the trauma inflicted on victims, survivors, and first responders when a shooter uses this weapon on people. I genuinely have no idea what she's talking about. I don't know what that means. I don't know, understand that quote. What does that mean? They don't understand that specific AR-15 does a certain kind of damage that other guns don't, or I don't understand.
That is the larger narrative that they paint, especially if you read the editorial by not Sally Busby, but the editors of the Washington Post, which was an op-ed that they wrote. That there's a common theme in major media coverage of AR-15s where they're comparing them to 9mm and noting that, you know, an AR-15, especially at close range, delivers more, devastation to a target than a 9mm does. Now, of course, the problem with this comparison, even if that is the case, right, is that they don't. What you're doing is comparing a rifle and a handgun,
right?
And essentially, you get the same results if you compare any rifle and any handgun. And in fact, the AR-15, as anyone who owns firearms probably well aware, is on the lower end of the spectrum as far as rifle cartridges go. You know, the 5.56 or 223 cartridge, while, you know, I certainly don't want to underplay the power that it possesses, is certainly more subdued than a lot of hunting rifles, essentially, or even older military rifles like the M1 Garand or what have you. But, you know, even like a Remington 700, a very common hunting rifle is going to fire a larger caliber round than your AR-15. It's just one of these things where, again, I think the issue is you're kind of misleading people, maybe because like the Washington Post editors themselves don't really understand this distinction, or maybe they do, and it's just intentional. But, they're trying to claim that AR-15s are particularly, they stand out from other guns in such a significant way that they should be banned. And if we ban them, that would solve a lot of problems, because it's all about finding a very simple solution. And course, the reality is for anybody who understands firearms that there's no particularly good reason to ban the AR-15 for being too powerful and not go after all kinds of other guns. Right.
Yeah, exactly. Stephen, was there anything you wanted to add before I close? Because I did want to compliment you on this piece as well.
Yeah, I mean, look, I just think one of the reasons I wanted to talk about this on this show is because it's not a completely black and white thing, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I do think there are reasons why you would publish graphic content, but I just think the Post missed the mark in so many different ways in how they decided to go about doing it compared to, like, what Active Self-Protection does. And, you know, I just think that it's important to have that sort of conversation. Here's where we get into the nuance of this, right? Like, here are the reasons I don't think that this was the right decision, but I'm not completely opposed to publishing graphic images under the right circumstances. So, you know, that we talked a bit about this on my podcast with Cam, but I thought it would be really appropriate here because obviously a big part of what Active Self-Protection does is publish graphic content. But the way it goes about doing it is totally different.
Yeah, 100% agreed. And I understand, I've seen Cam Edwards on your show, and I understand, yes, his beard is much fluffier and more majestic than mine. But I hope he doesn't blur you completely away from doing the Gutowski Files over here with us at Active Self-Protection. So folks, go over to thereload.com. This article that Stephen wrote, this analysis piece, is not behind the paywall. Anybody can read it. And it's a really, I think, a really good example of his writing, which is fantastic. And I'm saying that not because I have to. He didn't pay me any money to say that. It really is great writing. You might say that Stephen has a huge brain and all the best words. That's what I've been told about him. Very big brain. And that's what we love having him on. He does really good work. So do me a favor. Go over, read this article. And while you're there, consider getting a membership. You can do the entry level. I think it's $10 a month. And if you don't love it, if it's not bringing you value, you can cancel anytime you want. There's no commitment at all. But I think once you get over there and look at what he's offering and realize he's in a lane that nobody else is in, you're going to want to stick around and you want to keep giving him a couple bucks a month to keep doing what he's doing. Stephen, I appreciate you as always, sir. Great article. Always a pleasure to see you. And you said you were going to say.
Well, on a lighter note, by the way, after this heavy episode, tonight is the, I'm going to break our no sports rule that we've randomly and back from, but, it's the Swift Bowl, Eagles, Chiefs. And really,
Kelsey Bowl?
Swift Bowl. Cause we get to just see where she's going to come down on the fan spectrum. She's supposed to be an Eagles fan, but now she's dating a Chiefs player. What is she going to do? I might have to burn all of my, Spotify playlists of Taylor's music if she comes out in the Chiefs jersey.
And there lies the problem with the digital age. We can't burn album covers or whatever. It's not a thing anymore.
I might have to buy some albums to burn.
Forcefully
I have delete. All of her music already.
My Apple Music, I'm going to do violence to it later, get rid of all of my Taylor Swift.
I will delete my playlist. It's not as satisfying. It's not as visceral.
Hey, if Jason Kelsey's wife can come out in their documentary and say, look, if he goes to play for another team besides Eagles, I can't wear their jersey. That's my kind of gal.
That's your Eagles fan bar. And if 100%. Taylor doesn't measure up, I'm going to be very sad.
All right. But, so folks, we'll see. Point of this is we're going to try to keep the sports to the very end. So if you do get this far, you can just hit stop before the sports starts. All right. Well, good luck to your Eagles tonight, sir. My brother-in-law and sister are KC fans. He has a KC arrow tattooed on him. So I'm a little torn here. Plus the Eagles are in my division. So
Chiefs have had enough good times. Just spread it around to the rest of us here.
Yeah, I mean, as a Commanders fan, I concur entirely. Stephen, as always, sir. You have the last word.
All right. Go Birds. I'm switching it up. Go Birds.